and welcome to a special episode of Contending at the Water Cooler. I'm your host, Joey Moser, and I have a very special guest with me for this extra episode, Oscar-nominated costume designer of Frankenstein, Kate Hawley. After I embarrassingly tell her how much I love her work on Guillermo del Toro's gothic romance Crimson Peak, Hawley and I dive into the Oscar-nominated work of Del Toro's latest film. We talk about the dandy silhouette of Oscar Isaac's Victor Frankenstein. I ask her what, as always, she would like to take from her own designs to put in her own closet. And of course, we talk about the drama of Elizabeth's casual wear. Where is she wearing that red outfit to after that meeting on the steps at the very beginning? It's all great. Please make sure you are subscribed to our podcast on your favorite podcast app as we gear up for Oscar voting later this week. Happy listening. Before I dive into some questions, I have to tell you the nerdiest thing. I'm a huge fan of Crimson Peak. And I've even told Jessica Chastain this shamelessly. One of my favorite shots of any movie, literally of all time, is it's in the trailer too. I just rewatched it literally before I jumped in the shower, is there's a shot near the end of the film where Jessica Chastain is running down the stairs.
And, nice
and she has a knife in her hand. And the way that that thing just goes like this, I'm so in love with that image.
Oh, you know what? Sometimes, you know, there's this, we're in a world where everyone's trying to push and go do something iconic, and it never works like that. It's the way the truth distills when you're doing the process, you know, when something like that happens. So they are magic moments because they're discoveries for everybody. Yeah. You know, you can plan movement. I mean, I'm always thinking about movement in terms of clothing and that, but it's the combination of all the elements. You know, Guillermo talks about that a lot, about all of us being one department, and it's the context of that that makes it amazing as well, the big staircase. But I love that you love that moment. It's so truly operatic. That's me doing Lucia de Lammermoor.
I literally just watched it like 20 minutes ago, and I'm like, oh, it's so good. Like
watch it. I do much, but
that was a movie that I remember. I was like, I'm such a costumes nerd that like anyone that I'm with, like with Frankenstein, one of my fellow writers, we saw it at Telluride.
Yeah.
And I hadn't seen any images of it, and he knows what a nerd I am about costumes. And one of the first things we see is Mia Goth in that red dress, and he was hitting my leg. He's like, you're freaking out. And I was just like, I wonder where she wears that. After this, I was like, does she go to the, I've made this joke a million times and everyone's probably sick of it. I was like, does she go to the store and buy some apples in that red?
She goes to the 7-Eleven. You know this. You know the answer to that. What is it? You know, that's her version. That's her comfort outfit. I think also it's, you know, that I'd done when with the Crimson Peak, I'd been doing lots of robot movies and, you know, Edge of Tomorrow, all that kind of action stuff. And it's just because of the way jobs landed. So nobody really gave me a chance to do historical or more what I call a costume drama. But Guillermo, he it's the language, the shared language. And then so when he said do Crimson Peak, that was like let us loose on the lace box, you know. Every time we work with Guillermo, it's like you've been hungry and then it's a feast.
Oh, you give us that movie. I was even just looking at some of the production design. It's just like, we are not starved when Guillermo really leads into that.
And Tom said to me, he said, because I said, oh, I just want to be working like this all the time. He said, Kate, if you have the opportunity to even do this once or twice in your lifetime, you should be count yourself lucky to be working like this with a, you know, and it's the collaboration of it all. It's, you know, I do value it. I realize I'm very, very lucky to have had these two opportunities. You know, it's something a costume designer's dream, really.
Yeah.
So.
I'm upset.
But I was brought up in the world of opera, so, you know, like there is a natural leaning.
I have to say with Frankenstein, anytime I come back to it and I like, you know, specifically look at the costumes, I feel like there's something that I appreciate and love even more, because, you know, the costumes are so what I love, one of the things I love about the costumes in Frankenstein is that there is so much drama in the costumes and some of the silhouettes, but they're not, the silhouettes and the colors, they're not drama for drama's sake. There's a real connection to the character that I feel like sometimes we don't see in a lot of other, like, you know, drama, I don't want to say costume dramas, but, you know, like, films or
parade or thing. Well, because that, you know, when you're working with Guillermo and there's the structure of the script, and then we talk about color and that, it's metamorphosis, and there's, you know, all of these things, every element, including the production design, has a purpose to it. Mm-hmm. You know, and what he does as a director is he gives you the time, the prep to do all of that, to work out the language and that. And that's what can happen. You know, sometimes you work on shows and you're thrown straight into it and you don't get past that initial thing to start distilling the language, but he makes sure you have that time. And so we're all operating in the same way to reinforce the imagery. And I think that's what makes those things so strong. And, you know, the silhouettes within the scale of the landscapes and environments that Guillermo's creating with Tamara and how Dan lights it, you know, it's when I went to theatre school, you know, it was, although this is a more opulent version of that, but it was always like, you know, the space isn't complete until the character's standing within it. And, you know, and it's the same when you're, you know, all those elements, it's all the elements combined that makes it powerful. And I think, you know, we really kind of worked, as well as the color palette, it was, you know, responding to the themes in the text and, you know, being aware of what everybody else was doing informs and inspires you. You know, it's, you know, you, it's not an island. It's always better when you've got that shared language and you're working same thing. You know, like, I could do anything with the color, but if Dan went and did something else, I wouldn't have any power of color anymore. But he made sure that we could attain the truth of the color, and he supported it. And that's why when I went to the final edit, I went, oh, it's just what we planned. You know, it wasn't a surprise, and it wasn't so often, you know, people grade it down and you're left with gray world. And, you know, that wasn't going to be allowed to happen. We all had to support each other's work under Guillermo. So,
yeah. I mean, I have a theater background myself, so I remember any time that I was I was obnoxious little like musical theater boy. So I was like anytime costume, like when we were like finally getting our costume, I felt like I was a little I was just like, I was so excited to get it because I was like, the costume is going to inform my posture and my movement and my all this stuff. And hearing you say that about like until the actor is in the space and I don't know. I feel like with all of Guillermo's movies, every time we see a new one and we're blessed with one, you can tell it's such a collaborative process. Yeah. You can feel it. I think that's why a lot of us really like glom onto his work.
Well, he's an artist, you know, he's an artist.
And he loves story and he loves how every single element affects the overall vision and affects the character and affects the arc. I love that.
And then there's a magic when you start having the repetition and of language and that and everything's reinforcing itself. You know, I often people comment on things because often I find it frustrating because I was brought up in the world of Greenaway and Derek Jarman and they're so visual. You know, most of the stories told through, if you didn't have the script, you know, I love it when film medium is, it's a medium. It's you know, it's no rules about it, but it's the rules that you create are the consistent thing. And I love that the story is told as much through the visuals as through the dialogue, you know, it allows space for all of those things. And I love every film exploring that balance between them. I think it would be very boring if everything had to be only based off, you know, dialogue and script, because as we know, so often things are said without saying them, you know.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I gotta figure out what character I want to ask about first. I think that.
What about the nuns?
The nuns. I don't know. There's so many. I could talk to you for hours just about veils.
The nuns are coming. The nuns are coming. They've got the best veils. So to speak. You might have to edit that bit. But something threads version.
Yeah.
Picture of it. So.
Well, I think one of the things that I have to say that I felt like I was making up in my own brain about, first of all, Oscar Isaac, in my opinion, is one of the most beautiful men in the world.
Yep, and a beautiful person too. Like in every way, he's the wonderful gift of a collaborator. I love him.
There was a, I originally thought to myself, I kept thinking about how Victor sees himself.
Yes.
And I kept, and then I went back the second time that I watched it and I showed the film to my husband. I was like, okay, he's looking at his reflection a lot. And the word that that popped into my head that I kept thinking about, maybe it's my love of Oscar Wilde, was the word dandy.
Totally.
And then I was just like, no, that's not the right word. But then I was like looking at like, I don't know, some pictures of him. And I was just, and then I was looking at some of Richard Merritt's illustrations of him as Victor. And I was like, oh no, I think that's a good word. So I guess I kind of wanted to ask, in this world, science and religion and ego and things like that, where does like the kind of dandy fit in? Because I gotta say, like, this picture right here alone is just like,
we loved working on those. Richard's a divine. He really gets character and interpretation. I love working with him. You know what, it's also part of the world he comes from, you know. There's that kind of, there's lots of threads here. So Gemma often, when we're describing the world, and when we're going back to the world of Mary Shelley, he describes the world of Byron, Percy, and Mary Shelley as the rock stars of their time. Mm-hmm. So that's the first point of reference. We even had portraits of Byron, you know, in my early research, because, of course, I went into Shelley's world first. You know, there's portraits of him dressing up in different robes, things he'd collected on his visits to Egypt or whatever it was, you know. This is a man that rode in Napoleon's army at one point, and then, you know, there's a red velvet jacket, and we sort of, you know, that was one thread running through. And then you've got, like Lord Byron, Frankenstein comes from an aristocratic house, you know, Baron Frankenstein. So you've got that old world value. Now he's on hard times. There's this sort of, the bohemian language fits in with that sort of using, you know, beautiful clothes as part of an artist's wardrobe. I mean, really, artist is the other key word that then went into dandy and rock star, you know, that he's an artist creating the creatures as Michelangelo creating David, you know. So all those threads start looping up. And then when you look at how an artist works, and we looked at everything from, you know, I looked at Francis Bacon standing there with all the viscera of his paint all over his clothes, Damien Hirst in his formaldehyde way. They're still wearing beautiful things. They're not wearing a uniform or here's my smock or here's my, you know, doctor's gown for surgery or anything. It's about the pursuit of the muse. The clothes are what the clothes are. They're part of your work and every day. I remember Oscar bringing in another reference, William Blake, and there's this wonderful thing of the creator naked, almost like his creature, and Guillermo plays with that imagery in the apartment when he's trying to work things out. You get the beginnings of that mirroring image reflection, you know, the sort of narcissistic thing, which you also see the creature doing later in the lab when he's cut himself shaving. You know, so all of this sort of world comes in. Nureyev in his apartment, you know, that sort of bohemian stuff. Some of these artifacts are from Victor's childhood that he's brought with him. I mean, we're looking at that not only drinks milk, but he carries all the elements of his childhood. He's got his mother's bed in there. There's the angel, you know, some furniture. He would have taken clothes from that world as well. So we discuss that. And then, of course, he meets Harlander and comes into money, and so suddenly he's distracted by Elizabeth and money. You know what it's like as a poor student.
Yeah.
Then suddenly you grow up and you want carpet under your feet. I don't know. bohemian sort of thing, and there's definitely that language and sort of that aristocratic, you know, defying the father and the rules of that world and going into something else. And there's that sort of arrogance of an artist, you know, the sort of certain artists. I'm not going to sort of blanket that, but the sort of personality being big. And you look at Picasso and Francis Bacon and Nureyev, there is again that rock star element to them. And Oscar's physicality was like that. The world of the medical lecture theatre was definitely a performance. You know,
yeah.
Talked about the thin white Duke. Oscar looked at the physicality of Prince, the way he struts on and, you know, sells his project. So all of those things kind of, you know, get played with in rehearsals, get played with in fittings. You know, we build a wardrobe, we build a dress-up box. And Oscar was so brilliant at going, finding moments for things. Like, you know, the whole moment of that creation, Guillermo talked about that taking hours and hours, you know, that it was a labor that went through night and day, night and day. And so we didn't change the clothes, but the visceral quality of all the acid and everything ended up on them. And then, you know, the moment Oscar dives downstairs in the dressing gown, it's not, you know, it's so far away from I'm going to put on my smock to be the evil doctor. You know, it's just, you know, all part of his, it's just part of his world, you know, it's just part of his world. So.
Yeah, I think that thinking about like the things that he might bring back from his childhood, like I want those red gloves like so badly. I don't know what I would do with them. I don't know what I would accessorize them with, but I just want to wear.
I tried some on the other day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're really just, I don't know. I kept, I'm sure everyone is talking to you about the color red, obviously, because it's a beautiful symbol and thread throughout the whole film and how through the production design and the cinematography. But I mean, like, I kept those red gloves. I don't know. Just thinking about like red hands, red gloves, blood
the stain
surgery.
Of the blood, the mother's hand on his back as a child, you know, the blood stain. And, you know, that's, you know, Guillermo, you know, I remember when we were shooting that and, you know, Mia goes into the premature labor and brings up the blood stain. And he was the one who went, let's put it on young Victor, you know, and then you see the link to the red gloves, you know. So, you know, Guillermo always, you know, he's got that vision all the way through where he can add what you've done and sort of, you know, keep echoing it. And, you know, the sort of threads and the linking was a really exciting part of that world. And, you know, and you know, even just getting the colors, you know, that all, you know, the specific colors and tones of red, you know, Guillermo's a brilliant, you know, he's brilliant to work with in color because, you know, I can give him 50 reds and he'll go, it's those two. Or, you know, and we play, you know, if, you know, Dan's got a certain red or Tamara and that, then we'll sort of play, you know, in the apartment, there's sort of dusky pinky red on the walls. We actually had a brighter red for Mia at the beginning. But when you look at the tones of red, and Guillermo describes it as such a hungry colour, you know, we're always shifting and adapting, you know, according to the scene. So, and that's again in collaboration with Dan. He would often turn up to fittings as we discuss colour and that, because it we all have to be on the same page.
Hungry is a great word for red. I don't think I've ever heard anyone, you know, you hear like passion.
That's a Guillermo. That's a Guillermo. Hungry.
That's great.
Everything's a banquet, a feast, you know.
I love that.
That's what I love about that. You know, I just go, you know, there's not many people working like that, and to, you know, dive in is just, you know, it's also a feast for your brain. You know, it's brain food working like that. And I love it. I love working with them.
I was even just staring at, I saw this beautiful picture of me in that wedding dress, and I kept thinking about when we see what happens to Elizabeth, that color blood of red, but then like it goes all the way up to the cross that's around her neck. I was obsessed reading about like the pieces of jewelry that were borrowed from Tiffany's, and it's just
I made those ones
you made them. Ah, those that I mean the whole thing about
Tiffany's
that
made it. I didn't make it. Tiffany's made it.
No, the
really different version there.
Yeah, the I think my favorite thing about that wedding dress is I saw one shot of Mia looking straight at the camera. I think it's like a publicity shot or something. Yeah. And the way that the white is like wrapped around her fingers, and I was just like, oh my god, the way that it is such a thematic visual parallel to like the bandages of the creature. I don't know. I feel like every single thing that every one of her costumes, there's such a scientific peeling back of the layers of things. I feel like if I tip off like
the x-rays, really, in terms of layering. And that was the approach I took to the wedding dress, was definitely, you know, working like you're peeling back layers, because we've been looking so much at, you know, with Mike's work and that, looking at 18th century wax, scientific wax dolls and you know the sort of the wonderful interpretations of the human anatomy. Even who's that wonderful, I'm not sure if wonderful, you know, the German anatomist that does all the what's called bodies, you know, the a German with a hat, unlike Frankenstein himself, you know, something. So, you know, it's all those layers. So that was very much the approach. And also because Guillermo wanted, you know, the ethereal and ephemeral with her. And when you're linking that to the sense of memory, I mean, so much is from the tone of the script too. You know, there's mood and tone, which is a big part of it. Atmosphere, you know, creating atmosphere. And even when you're using like the bloodstain in Mia's dress, you know, that not only is the sort of bookend to the beginning image of the mother in the veil, it's sort of where the Red story ends, really. But it's not a, it's a heightened kind of language where the breakdown sort of part of the poetry, I guess, that we're trying to create. Yeah. You know, it's not like Carrie, although I love Carrie, but you know, it's a different, we're not going for super real.
Yeah.
You know, we're keeping all the language in that world. And Mia brings that, like when I was looking at Mia at the beginning, she's got such an amazing mercurial quality in her performance and the way her face shifts, you know, that there's so many different kinds of beauty and character that cross that face. And, you know, when we were talking about the sort of 60s punk rock reference with Victor, and that was also looking at Bieber in that world, but that answer to the world of Tiffany's, you know, there's this sort of kind of using colour in a way that sort of creates moods and tone. And Mia really, she, you know, we were kind of really going with, you know, what Mia brought to it as well, you know, like, you know, I always go, what would it have been? You're always trying to go, what feels right for that person? The paths we went down with Oscar and with Mia, you know, would you have done that with another actor, you know, because what they bring to it as well, you know?
Yeah, Mia has a real uninhibited shapeshifter quality to her, but she also knows how to be, what's the right word? She has a stillness to her and you can tell that she's very open to being like an instrument for the story, I guess, if that makes sense. Like
she's very instinctive as a performer.
Yeah, she's very fearless and in a very sort of a reserved way, which I find very curious and in some ways very unsettling, depending on what part.
There's a danger in it too, you know, like literally as well. No, I mean, you know, like giving her crinolines and she's, you know, she's very, I don't want to describe her process on her behalf because she could speak to that more, but she describes it in my presence as very instinctive and organic and, you know, which is kind of how some of what I feel my process is too a little bit, you know, and that, you know, there's discovery through that. And I think Guillermo has spoken about how he embraced that and went with it. And I think that's what made it really interesting as Elizabeth, you know, sort of unexpected registers and tone with her. And, you know, because we're always looking at these different fleeting images of Elizabeth, you know, that through either through veils or just, you know, different, you know, how she is through Victor's eyes is very different from the creature. And she's a shapeshifter for absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's a way to describe her.
Be very interesting to go back and watch it to see her through both, I was supposed to say both gentlemen, but I guess both persons' point of view and how they see her. Yeah. Before I let you go, I have to tell you a couple things that I like about.
We could have an hour.
Yeah, I think a lot of people were obviously talking about how much they loved Elizabeth's wedding dress, but I gotta say, Williams.
Thank you for mentioning William.
It's like pearly.
He's a clothes horse.
And he knows how to wear, like, first of all, also Felix is somebody who I think that people don't give enough credit to in how he wears clothes. Like his, like,
you know,
posture.
He came from a classical dancing background. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Ballet.
That makes total sense.
Ballet. Because what? his I think his both parents, or definitely one of them, is an opera singer. And he comes from he did classical ballet for a while. Like, I look at him and go, oh my God, he should do Buster Keaton. Like, he's got also got amazing comic delivery. I know, sorry. Please,
oh my God.
Please.
Well, now I can't.
But he is that. You go, if you wanted a gift of an actor walking into this period that's so tailored, you know, like more later it becomes less structured, he was a dream, an absolute dream to dress. You know, like, we did pour a lot of love into his wardrobe with the, you know, it was all hand tailored. You know, there's a beautiful golden leather coat.
That
I don't think you
gold
can, you know.
Jacket. My God.
I'm going to post some pictures on him because he was just beautiful. You know, him getting away with the wedding suit, the princely wedding suit. I don't know how many people could have got away with that.
Yeah.
Felix just, he really, you know, when we're talking about it, because there were lots of earlier iterations that sort of changed as the script developed, or, you know, budget became clearer and that. And there was, Guillermo always described him as the sun to Victor's moon, you know, and the light to the dark. And Felix really embodies that. You know, there's something cherubic, but also really noble. He's another kind of shapeshifter, not unlike Mia in a way. But
I didn't recognize him at first, to be honest. I was like, I know who that is. I was literally, I remember walking out when I saw the film with Telluride, like on IMDb. I was like, who was that? And I didn't realize who it was. I was like, I'm such an idiot that I didn't recognize him.
Oh, we couldn't get enough of William, and we loved dressing him. I mean, you know, to be able to put someone in, you know, he was very romantic in his own way. I loved dressing him.
Yeah, I love that gold. Oh God, love that gold jacket. I love it. I think like the lapel is darker on the top than it is.
We used a bit of pony hide, and then some of it we added because you've got a little bit of that Swiss German influence coming into the bridal dress. We did the same with his clothes, and you've got a little bit of, what do they call it? Poke work. I've got to be careful what I say here, but you know, a lot of that sort of, you see it in the Germanic lederhosen and stuff, all that sort of, you know, tooled leather work and that. So when you look close up at that tailoring, which, you know, sometimes you don't get to see very much in film, but we definitely put it all in there, and, you know, waistcoat after beautiful waistcoat. Yeah. We had a beautiful tailor who was put under the drum. I mean, you know, when you turn to someone who's used to spending 3 weeks building something, you go, wow, you've got 4 days.
Yeah. Everything is so beautiful. The tailoring on everything is just so, is exquisite. Like, I just can't.
Again, it's a beautiful period. I got obsessed, and it was like, you know, the sort of Crimean battle scene. I was going, I want a whole army, because when you look at the pictures of the war, there's some amazing puts. Gemma and I were looking at them, and the tailoring, you know, they even padded to get this wonderful sort of shape. So men looked amazing, amazing.
Yeah. The, I'm just looking at pictures now of all the costumes, but I have to say, like, the a couple of things that I also just really love in terms of the creature, the specifically the bandages that's at the top. I made a joke the first time that I saw the film, and I was like, I say this with all affection. I was like, I hope I see a gay guy at Pride wearing that as like an ode to like Thomas.
There's certainly a definite, there's not a harness-y. You could not say there's a homoerotic feel somewhere in there.
Well, when the first time Jacob Elordi came, I'm Jacob Elordi, the tall, he's such a handsome man, but like the first time he came out, my husband, when I showed him the thing, he was like, oh.
You know, I think Jacob's spoken to sort of going, you know, what he loved about being the creature was that he wasn't judged just on his looks, but you also realize what a serious actor he is in the process of it. And, you know, again, talking back to that thing of, you know, the mirrors and reflections, well, you've got that with Victor and the creature themselves. So there is, you know, not necessarily homoerotic, but there is that kind of, you're looking at yourself, this creature that you've made, and there is that narcissism in that kind of response to it. And I like the sensuality with that. And I like that that's part of the, you know, even the way the creature moves has got it that, you know, it's very beautiful, really. Yeah. So, but we enjoyed wrapping him in leather for sure.
Yeah. Well, I also love the, we had a bad snowstorm here. I live in the Midwest and we don't get a ton of snow. And when I ventured out in the snow, I'm very short, so the snow was like up past my knees.
Creating an amazing image.
Yeah, and I was just like, I wish I had the hood, the coat that we first see the creature in. I love that the shape of it, how it goes really wide and it bends down in front of his face. I just want.
Trying to go for quite a monastic look for that. That whole thing with the hood, again, it was sort of just a, you know, a little bit of a reference to the, you know, the religious imagery of a monk, especially when he's sort of standing there with the light on
it and that. And you can't see his face or...
And all that process, you know, at the very beginning with Guillermo, working on lots of silhouettes and studies, you know, because this is his creature, you know, like it was definitely guided by him, the exploration and that, and sort of, you know, with the extra layers of fur, is it a beast and all of that. But I love how he reveals his creatures. It's a work with.
Yeah. If you could indulge me just for one more second, if I could ask, my favorite thing to ask costume designers is, if you could steal something from your own designs, what would you take for your own closet? I've already mentioned the gloves for myself, the gold jacket. Basically, this is just me begging for costumes from you. But
Well, you can have it. I'm sure Netflix will let you have anything you want.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
try not to be the bag lady because I already am. You know, like I went through that stage of carting everything around and it ends up in heartbreak. So I think, could I have two things that I could take?
Sure.
Okay. One would be the sculpted hand on the father's hat, the, you know, the sigil of Frankenstein. And the other would probably be the scarab necklace because in terms of the red one that Mia wears, because that one thing distilled all the imagery of the film for me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So.
Yeah.
Well, I can hide it in my pocket. No one would.
Oh, yeah. No one will see it. Wear a nice turtleneck just right underneath it. The whole
Uncle
time.
Christopher won't give it to me. It's in a vault in the archives now.
Yeah. Yeah. I also want the little.
You have to let your loved ones go. No. You know?
If you love them, set them free.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's my memories. Am I not supposed to say that? I'm taking my memory.
Well, thank you so much for letting me just gush at you so much.
No, but it's a really interesting talking to people about what they respond to, and you always learn from that. And then, you know, when people respond to different things, I find it exciting. I go, yes, of course you could read it like that. And I think that's when it's nice when things have that freedom to be read in many ways. Mm. And, you know, you got the whole crew on every department putting everything they could into it. So, you know, it's nice to hear things talked about and that process. And I think we're all, you know, it was a very special project to be involved in, and I'll look back on it as an old lady.
Yeah. And I'm so sorry.
Older lady.
Well, I didn't congratulate you on the nomination. I'm so sorry. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Of course.
Very small and wonderful. You know, yeah. I feel like that maybe I'm nearly a grown up.
It's not the worst when you realize you're a grown up, isn't it?
I know. And then I want to behave really badly after that. But also, but one of the wonderful things about that on a last note is, you know, everyone I've worked with and everyone who's nominated and, you know, in every area, but, you know, you notice it in your world of costume and that everybody's done what they set out to do on the box. Everyone served their director, everyone served the story. And I've made some really great friends through it.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. Have fun with the rest of the season and have a good rest of your day.
What a pleasure to meet you,
you
Joey.
Too. Thank you.
Really lovely. Okay.
You too. Bye, thank you. Bye.
Give my love to your husband.
I will. I definitely will. Thanks.